dollar bill, $2 bill. Ain't no bill like a railroad bill.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 30th day of August. Very nice to have you with us. 14 minutes past 9 o'clock, and let me introduce the panel to you, and we'll get started. We have a lot to talk about, as we always do. Ira Fussfeld is here. He is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and always a pleasure to have Ira with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Joe, and everyone. Nice to be back.
Good to have you back. We also welcome Vera Carias-Kelly. She is a professor of comparative politics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
Have classes started for you?
No, just meetings. Classes start next week.
Oh, great. Okay.
Classes, as I remember, are the fun of it. The meetings, not so much.
Well, we don't want to say anything like this on the radio now, do we?
I think it's just inferred, right?
I can, because I'm out of there.
There you go.
Judy Patrick joins us as well. She is a longtime editor of the Daily Gazette and currently vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Joe.
Very nice to have you with us. And the Baconator. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning.
Yeah, I took a long, long walk this morning, and I got back here, and I got down on the floor, and I did my back exercises. And all of a sudden, my cell phone began to ring, and the media project people were on the phone and saying, "You're late, don't you see?"
But then he had a craving for bacon, apparently.
Well, I had already bought the bacon on the way.
Well, anyways, we have to sit here in a small room with a bag full of bacon.
Here, I want Vera.
No, thank you. I think I don't want bacon right now, but it's just the scent of it.
Yeah, I want people
to imagine that.
It's
a
like
radio
we're in a
show.
It does smell like a diner, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
We'll put up the little Christmas tree air fresheners.
Okay, I apologize.
That's all right. It isn't onions.
Or maybe I should take it out, sit in my office, eat it, and then come back at my pleasure.
We'll call you back at around 10:25.
Okay, so here's the deal.
It's a plan.
Here's what I really think happened, said Monk, a reference that none of you understand. However, I am going to just say I hope all of our friends join us for the reunion of the Berkshire Ramblers at the Guthrie Church, 413-528-1955. That's all I'm going to say about that. I just hope to see you there.
Sunday, 7 o'clock.
Yeah, that's the one.
Let's hope you get the bacon grease off your fingers before then.
It's hard to play the banjo when your fingers are slippery.
Yeah, you noticed?
Is this a fundraiser
for the Guthrie Church.
Oh, good.
Nobody takes
and this
any
this is
money
sort of like the Weaver's reunion, the Berkshire
Weaver's reunion. Yeah, sure. We've been closing out the troubadour season at the church for many years now.
I believe my father's first car was a Nash Rambler. Is there any connection there?
There is.
There is. I know.
I'm not allowed to tell you about it, but there is. And it was a wonderful car. I love that car.
Hey, Don McGahn's leaving.
I was like, you took that long breath, and I knew you were going to try to redirect us. Okay.
There you go. I was trying to make a good segue, and then I figured there's probably not a good way to make a good segue, so I'll just make the segue.
Well, maybe he's going to the concert.
Yeah, that's right. He's got time now.
Got time.
President Trump surprised Don McGahn, the White House counsel, on Wednesday by abruptly announcing that Mr. McGahn will be leaving his job this fall. Oh, by the way, sir, you have some free time coming up. Effectively forcing the long-anticipated exit of a top advisor who has cooperated extensively in the investigation into Russian election interference. The president made the declaration on Twitter without first informing Mr. McGahn, according to people close to both men. It came 11 days after the New York Times reported the degree to which Mr. McGahn, who was by Mr. Trump's side at major moments as the president sought to keep control of the Russian inquiry, has emerged as a key witness in the investigation. Over the last 9 months, Mr. McGahn has given 30 hours of testimony in at least three voluntary interviews. His departure leaves the White House without one of the few senior advisors who have been willing to push back against Mr. Trump. It also raised the prospect of further West Wing exits, particularly in the White House counsel's office, where Mr. McGahn has had a loyal staff with several people staying in their jobs, surely out of devotion to him? What does it mean that Don McGahn is leaving in the fall?
Well, I think one of the things that it shows us is what the congressional people are saying. They're not saying anything bad about Trump, but they wanted McGahn to stay because they thought he was a seawall to protect the country and from insanity. And now he's out. So, for example, we have the firing of Mueller as a potential thing that Trump wanted to do for a long time. McGahn said no. And we do know that Trump thought he was disloyal, although he says good things about him. And even though, you know, we keep hearing ad nauseum from everybody that McGahn's job was to be the White House counsel as opposed to the president's counsel. But we hear from Mitch McConnell, we hear from Senator Grassley and others that this is a terrible thing. I mean, they really sound genuinely alarmed that this seawall is coming down.
Well, if they're concerned about the sanctity and the protection of the Mueller probe, those senators in particular could have the ability to pass some legislation so that Mueller would be protected. So, you have to be – I'm a little disingenuous when you hear these comments. I do think that it's apparently that this guy Emmett Flood, who was Clinton's impeachment lawyer and who now works for Trump and who's been very much behind the scenes, is probably the guy who's going to replace McGahn, which says to me that he's more or less like McGahn, and it's based on his profile so far. But I think the broader issue that you allude to is that if McGahn was the seawall and there are a decreasing number of people in that counsel's office, Trump's going to be running around on his own, and that could only be to his detriment because he's going to do something that's going to really hurt him.
This wasn't a surprise, though.
No.
I mean,
no.
For anyone, the idea that McGahn had worked extensively to get a lot of federal judges appointed and through the confirmation process, and that he was going to leave after the Kavanaugh process was complete, was the understanding for the last couple of months, was my understanding.
Your point is very well taken. And one of the reasons that the majority leader, McConnell, and the others are so disappointed is they were willing to put up with all of Trump's antics, but because they were getting their way with the judiciary, which was huge. And so now, with him out, they're going to have antics without the protection.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just wondering if Trump is still trying to figure out what the difference is between a personal lawyer and legal counsel to the White House. He seems to have real trouble with distinguishing between a lawyer who defends the Constitution and makes sure the White House follows the rules according to the book, which is what Trump apparently asserted in an interview he was doing, or the White House was doing, versus having somebody defend him in corruption cases personally. Well, so I think this is one of those interesting debates we'll see emerging more and more.
Well, Vera, let's ask you this question. Boom, poof. You're the president of the United States. You, Vera, Carrie mm-hmm. Kelly, are now the president of the United States. You have to make appointments to your top jobs. Do you appoint somebody who you think will be on their own, or do you appoint somebody who you think you've known, Mitchell in the Nixon administration, or other people who you've known that will in fact be loyalists to you?
Well, right now, what I would do is appoint people that have extensive expertise in defending the White House. Yes, at this point, there's no other option. So Trump will have to go with experienced people, whether he knows them or not.
But he's
that is what I would recommend.
But he did appoint a loyalist mm-hmm. to the Attorney General's office, and yeah. lo and behold, he found yeah. that the Attorney General, regardless of what we may think of his mm-hmm. policies on a variety of issues, he did have enough integrity to say, I'm going to recuse myself, and Trump. That's the primary reason why Trump doesn't like this guy.
I don't know if it was integrity or fear, because he already knew he was in trouble because he had talked to the Russians.
And so, remember, yeah. Also, McGahn was the one who pushed Attorney General Sessions into recusing himself, or made sure he did. So this is one of those things that Trump has never forgiven McGahn for.
And by the way, it's not a matter of loyalty, as you suggest, Ira. It's a matter of enough loyalty.
Well, but he flat out says, I pointed to this guy because he was loyal to me. And
sure.
He was one of the first guys who endorsed me, and that was his prize.
Sure. Anybody want a piece of bacon?
And meanwhile, we also have, to change the subject, but only slightly, is that I just picking up on what Judy said, you know, this is a long time in coming, much like we're just waiting for the moment when we hear that Jeff Sessions has been shown the door. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's just a matter of time, right?
Well, what's right. happened to Lindsey Graham? I mean, Lindsey Graham is now giving Trump cover, predicting that this is going to happen, and suggesting that he's okay with it. Whereas we have Lindsey Graham on tape not that many months ago, saying what a bad thing this would be if he got rid of Sessions.
So the president is playing a hardball. He's getting on the phone with all these guys, including Lindsey Graham, which we know about now, and basically arguing vigorously, which some may think vigorous equals, you know, threat. These Republicans, up until now in the Senate, have been basically feckless. They have not in any way shown any guts, profile, and courage. Now you have McConnell now, who does seem to be very upset, and Grassley, who can be a vicious opponent. I don't want to mean negatively vicious, but he can be a very active opponent. They're sticking with their views on this. But if you get a call, I remember I was working for this congressman, and he hated the president. He hated Lyndon Baines Johnson. And I say, well, Toppy, how come you take his calls? He says, Professor, when the President of the United States calls you on the telephone, you take the call.
Well, Lindsey Graham puzzles me in this respect. He was such a close friend and worked arm in arm with John McCain, who was the independent of the Senate. And the fact that he is showing a willingness to go along with Trump is just sort of not something that I saw coming. Because he had been critical at other times in the months leading up to these most recent events. So I don't know what to make out of this guy. And
I refer you back to what I just said, the President of the United States on the telephone.
Well, you can take his call without saying, thank you very much, Mr. President. I'll take it under advice.
That's why I use the word feckless.
Yeah, well.
You know, in this big this big political chessboard, it's clear that they're getting into defense mode because they think they're going to take a beating in the midterm. And they're bracing for it and trying to anticipate how to defend themselves.
You know, Judy, I've been watching this. We'll probably talk about this, but the Siena poll is out this morning showing that Claudia Tenney is losing to Brindisi, by 2 points. Does anybody believe that? Does anybody believe anything a pollster tells you these days? When you see Ocasio-Cortez with a 50-point difference than what the pollsters were telling her? A 50-point difference. And I think everybody from Andrew Cuomo on knows that pollsters are only doing what they... You were talking to a pollster on the air yesterday.
Yes, yeah.
Pollsters can only go based on turnout from the past. Not on what's happening, you know, now. And who's going to turn out? Are a whole new group of people going to turn out? And I think that's entirely possible. Certainly that's what happened in the Cortez case.
Well, I think there are also new methodologies that are being used among some of the pollsters, where they use younger people, first-time voters, to interview other first-time voters and integrate some of that data now. So I think... I'm not sure about specific polls, but I think they're working very hard on identifying some of the problems with the established models.
Well, you know,
including
Vera,
at Siena.
Well, Vera, they're going to.
That's right, including at Siena.
They're going to have to work a hell of a lot harder.
So if Session gets fired, they have to have a temporary replacement. Is that Rob Rosenstein? Because getting a new attorney general is going to take a long time.
Right.
Well, you know, up until now, they were saying. We will not confirm another, if you fire him, we're not going to confirm another guy. Now they're not saying the same thing. And they know that their behinds are on the line too here. They don't want to lose the control of the Senate, which is possible here, not probable, but possible, and they are scared.
Well, we'll see what all emerges after the long weekend, I think. We have now a funeral. We have some silent periods among some of the political leaders, and I think they're all discussing, figuring amongst themselves what the strategies might look like.
And then Tuesday, the unofficial start of the of the season begins, of the political when people start paying attention to the races.
Well, Trump is going to be in Camp David this weekend, not in Bedminster, and someone in the government or in the press tweeted this morning that his aides are concerned that he's going to go to Camp David and be reckless because he's going to contemplate how much good press McGahn has received the last few days.
And, you know, being in the news business, the biggest day to dump big news, something controversial, would be the Friday before Labor Day weekend.
Right,
probably around 4 o'clock. Watch for it.
Why is that?
Because it won't get covered and people won't be watching
Fridays are generally a good time to do it because in the old days when people relied on newspapers, Saturday was the smallest circulation of the week. But they call it the 5 o'clock dump on Friday.
But that's all kind of out the window.
A lot of this administration is.
Because he just, but, I mean, there's...
And you just continue to weave in some of those accounts,
don't
you?
We're being dumped on all the time.
I was going to say, I feel dumped on every day.
I ain't going there.
But Labor Day weekend, there's more people are traveling.
Bacon helps.
Should I tell the bacon joke I just told?
No, don't.
Ira, do us a favor.
I'll tell you
don't.
Off the air, and then you can.
No, I mean, people can handle it. It's not fair to you, so go ahead.
No, go ahead. We'll do it later. I'll run it by
you. When do we care about fair?
Alan is eating bacon, and I heard a Jewish comedian say that his mother was so religious that they wouldn't even let him watch Porky Pig cartoons.
Well, that's good. I was looking at the clock saying, I don't know if we have time for the joke, but you have perfect time
for
that.
Too bad we had time.
No, I like it. Well, good morning. Welcome. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation when we come back. We'll even include your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we will be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It's the 30th of August. It is 9:35, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Judy Patrick, Vera Karius-Kelly, and Ira Fussfeld. We go to the letters now, and then we'll move on to other topics.
All right, says Daniel. At this point, Donald Trump is an unindicted conspirator in at least one felony. Is there no doubt that more will follow? Let's not move off this subject to mull the next distraction. This cannot be talked about enough. It's, if not for 70,000 voters in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, he would be facing serious criminal charges. Our Constitution is wonderful, but a flawed document. And that's Dan in Fishkill. Hmm. Anybody?
No. Okay.
Are you Willis?
Well, we basically think he's
mulling.
Right.
Yeah.
Mull cider?
Mullering.
Okay, and Julie says... saying that the popular vote shows that Hillary would have won is like saying that the Cubs would have lost the World Series if the games were 8 innings. It's a specious argument. 2 points. Many people in non-swing states vote differently or even not at all under the Electoral College. The political parties would completely change their campaigning and get out the vote processes under different rules. And that's from Julie.
Were we talking about that?
I don't know. You know, sometimes people just sit down and write.
But I mean, you know, they're right to think about these kinds of things. You know, the consequences of what's happening and connect these issues. I think it's a good point. Well, I mean, my students ask about it all the time. Why don't we get rid of the Electoral College?
And you tell them?
I say, listen, it's your system. You are the voters. You figure it out. It's not my country. I mean, I live here, but it's not my constitution in the sense that I was born here and have influence on it.
And you couldn't be president.
No, I could not. Even though you suggested I should apparently think about what that would be like.
Yeah, sure. And then Roger says, CNN and the Trump Tower meeting. Is this an example of fair and balanced journalism? Does the panel think that CNN and Bernstein should recant their claim that Trump knew about the Trump Tower meeting involving his son beforehand in light of the reactions by the other networks and channels? Or should they stick to their guns and reveal their other sources if there are any? And thank you, Roger. And Joe, we
I feel like it's a free-form Friday. People just run out. What about my water bill?
Actually, we did discuss this, Joe, as you know, because you're the moderator, yesterday.
We touched on it yesterday. I assume you talked about it in the media project.
And the answer to the writer's question is CNN should not recant if CNN believes it has the accurate story. Bernstein, for one, is saying we stick by our story. And that's something that sounds very familiar to those of us who remember Watergate. Mm-hmm. And he was right then, and I'm betting on him now.
But the one thing you learn from all the president's men is you don't want to make a mistake.
Without a doubt. Mm. It throws into doubt all of the other good work you've done.
Right, because Bernstein is saying there's more than one source on this story,
right.
And his other sources are sticking by what they've said. So he is sticking by the story. So CNN, but there were a couple of other news outlets that did rely on the one bad source who wasn't clear, couldn't confirm for sure what happened. And so those two agencies, they modified their story. They put editor's notes on it, and that was the right thing to do.
Now, of course, Donald Trump says you're all a bunch of liars.
Well, he says that anyways about everything. So
because he is.
Well,
that's his, he just goes for the frontal assault every time, and he uses the same lines. I mean, that's his strategy. That is his legal strategy, as a matter of fact.
He says don't believe in anonymous sources that the press uses because the press makes them up. This is the guy who, when he was in his heyday in New York City, was the primary anonymous source for stories about him in the tabloids. It's just such nonsense.
Yeah,
and
he's a leaker.
He is the leaker.
Yeah.
And what is really sad about this, or not really, one of the sad things is that so many people in this country believe him. When so much of the empirical evidence shows how much he lies and that his lying is not new.
It is sad to say, says David, that Lindsey Graham is as weak as a limp noodle. He stood fairly strong against Trump while his good friend John McCain was alive. But, in capital letters, as soon as his moral compass, McCain, passes away, he sides with Trump. Don't these old white guys see how weak and embarrassing they are? Signed, another old white guy.
It's been suggested that Graham is angling to be Attorney General.
Well, could be. But why in the world would anybody want that?
Why would Trump want that, quite frankly? Because there have been rocky times.
Because they play golf together.
There you go.
Yeah. And Stephen says, while I can't stand the Cheeto in chief, do the Democrats need to consider acknowledging Trump's successes if such a thing exists? For instance, is the NAFTA really negotiation good thing? Well, the answer, Steve, is that there may be a few marginal things, but it now looks like what we have always known is that Trump wants victories. He's not so much concerned about substance. So NAFTA is not significantly going to be changed under these rules. That's the remarks of every analyst. And now we've got Avira Karyas-Kelly, who specializes in this kind of thing.
I mean, I agree with you 100%, because from what we have heard so far on the negotiations with Mexico, there are very few industries affected by any changes. Now, we'll see if the Canadians, they're expected to sign on today. There's a higher than 50% chance that they'll sign on to something. They are, of course, deeply concerned about the dairy industry. But, the new NAFTA will be called something else, but it won't substantially shift the way in which trade is done between the three countries, unless Canada decides to walk. So we'll see on that. On the North Korea peninsula, we have the potential for real disaster, because all of the negotiations supposedly that were taking place have led to very little. So Trump is actually desperate for some kind of a victory, and he may pursue the NAFTA deal with Canada more vigorously now because of the North Korean fears that they are just simply returning to business as usual.
Okay. Thank you, Stephen, for that provocative answer. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the negotiations are going to result in Mexico paying for the wall.
Well, and will it ultimately result in increased prices for American consumers to buy cars,
yes,
for example?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is potentially the outcome, right? A few more jobs in exchange for higher prices for American consumers. But, you know, so be it.
Okay, and Pete takes me to great task and wants to talk about Kevin Bacon.
Oh.
Dr. Shartok, Bacon, I was under the impression you had a heart-healthy diet. What's up? That's the Whole 30.
Tell you somebody was going to write about that?
Well, of course. For those of us in your age group, we need enlightened leadership by example.
Yeah, well, don't look to Alan for that.
However, in capital letters, enjoy it. This is somewhat condescending, if that is your choice. Hmm.
Joe, you must have had the Bacon Brothers on the air here at some point.
We did, yeah.
I'm sure
we did. Yeah.
They used to perform in the Hudson Valley.
They did, very much so.
Yeah. Okay, one more.
All right.
Claude says, Trump's scared of confrontation. Trump is obviously scared to confront anyone in person, including Putin. So he does it with tweets. His latest firing of McGahn is but another example. And that's from Claude in Albany. Mm.
Yeah, this from the guy who got famous on TV telling people, you're fired.
Right.
Can't do it in person now.
Yeah, just tweet it out. Oh, by the way. better than the Kobe deal, though, when he was fired while making a speech and had to look over somebody's head on CNN. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have other stories, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
When I'll see my lover again, I do not know. I do not know. Too long. Too long I've been gone.
Good morning. Welcome. Yeah, we have a show to do. That's all right. Don't worry about us. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. The music we're listening to is Dom, D-O-M, Dom Flemons. He is playing at Cafe Lena tonight. Cafe Lena, Saratoga Springs, 7 o'clock. You can find out more, cafelena.org. Don't forget, the cafe in this case has two Fs. Cafelena.org. Don Flemons, and of course, as always, you can see the playlist posted online, wamc.org/roundtable. Okay, excuse me. All right, now let's go to other topic. I'll wait till Alan's dressed, and then we'll go to the letters. But in the meantime, we'll go to another topic. How does that sound? Story out of the Washington Post, a front page: the U.S. is denying passports to Americans along the border, throwing their citizenship into question. So what's happening is that there are thousands of people along the border, and the Trump administration is accusing hundreds, possibly thousands, of Hispanics along the border of using fraudulent birth certificates since they were babies, and it's undertaking a widespread crackdown on this. The article talks about this gentleman by the name of Juan, who applied to renew his U.S. passport this year. And the government's response said it didn't believe he was an American citizen, even though he is. His birth certificate shows he was delivered by a midwife in Brownsville, the southern tip of Texas. He spent his life wearing American uniforms, 3 years as a private in the Army, then as a cadet in the Border Patrol, and now as a state prison guard, but not an American citizen, according to the federal government.
I mean, in essence, what this means is that people that have a U.S. citizen, are U.S. citizens and carry a passport, are then denied renewal of their passport. So the citizenship is taken away from people that have served this country honorably in so many ways. They are U.S. citizens. This is shocking indeed.
It's outrageous, especially when you think that some of these states are going to require people to show identification before they can vote. So it's another way of denying them the right to vote. It seems like pure harassment.
Now, if you read down in this Washington Post story, however, it is pointed out that this is a policy that began under Bush and Obama. So it's not new, but that it has become more widespread under Trump.
Well, more of a crackdown.
More of a crackdown.
Yeah. So cases identified by the Washington Post in interviews with immigration attorneys suggest a dramatic shift in both passport issuance and immigration enforcement. In a statement, the State Department said that it has not changed policy or practice regarding the adjudication of passport applications, adding that the U.S.-Mexico border region happens to be an area of the country where there has been a significant incidence of citizenship fraud.
Well, that might be the case. However, you do have to prove, as in a democratic state, that you actually have evidence against an individual to show that their passport was fraudulently obtained, which the government has not been able to do. So anybody whose passport renewal has been denied and has the money to actually retain an attorney has won their cases. But here's the thing. Not everybody has the financial resources to defend themselves against this attack, vicious attack, from the state's attorney. I mean, this is just simply shocking.
Right. Where is the ACLU on this one?
Yeah.
Well, they will be involved.
They will be arriving shortly.
Alan, did you want to say anything about this?
No, I agree with the rest of the panelists. It is it's outrageous. I don't care if any other president has done the same thing. This is a guy who served the country. You put him through an administrative hearing and say, you prove it. You're putting the onus on the wrong person. It's up to them to prove it. It's not right.
And can I make the point that we wouldn't know about this without a Washington Post article? They didn't announce this policy or this upgrade in enforcement. How much else is happening out there that we don't even know about?
That's true. Did you see the very end of the article, which I really loved, the little account of one of the... So the Washington Post did an amazing job on this. They actually talked to people who successfully defended themselves against their passports being taken away. And in court, the individual was asked by the state's attorney, do you remember where you were born? And I'm thinking, hello? Are these people lunatics?
Typically, the applicants eventually win those cases after government attorneys raise a series of sometimes bizarre questions about their birth. For a while, we had attorneys asking the same question, do you remember when you were born? I had to promise my clients that it wasn't a trick question.
Yeah, it was a Thursday.
I remember as if it were yesterday.
Yeah, all of a sudden, tough there day. Was light.
The sun was shining.
Somebody
when
you know what a lousy day
eyes.
Yesterday was.
Somebody slapped me on the back and then we just went on our way.
All right, Alan has letters.
I do, and here's a letter from Tricia who says, Alan, you kindly said you would mention this Alford event on the radio. We really appreciate it. And on. And then it says Alford Town Square, Labor Day weekend, and the Alford Town Center. And the music is provided by Aldo Lavacci and his troupe. Square dancing and dancing to vintage rock. And there'll be a food truck there. So that was a letter. Get it?
And it works.
Nice.
You got it.
Okay.
Okay.
Here we go. And Linda said, Lindsey Graham may want to replace Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. We have mentioned that today.
Yes.
The air.
I mean, Ira mentioned it. Sorry.
It is not feasible and explainable that Lindsey Graham has befriended Donald Trump so as to acquire the role of Attorney General when Jeff Sessions is removed. Recent remarks may be more potent than they seem. I misread the letter. We had one not so kind letter yesterday saying that I should learn to read. And here is the real letter. Is it not feasible and explainable that Lindsey Graham, see the difference between it is not feasible and it is it not feasible? You don't get it?
But it all came back to I said that.
It did. It did, Ira.
That is the key. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for reminding us of that. All right.
President,
was that it?
I took as much time on this letter as I possibly could.
Oh, don't worry. I got plenty of stuff to talk about. So we'll move on. And we do welcome your letters, though. panel@wamc.org.
Sometimes.
So while we're talking about politics, we mentioned yesterday, we talked yesterday about the primaries both in Arizona and Florida. We talked about the progressive candidate winning on the Democratic side and the Trump-backed candidate winning on the Republican side. Ron DeSantis is the Republican. He is now the nominee for Florida governor. Well, then he goes on Fox News and drew accusations of using a racist dog whistle on Wednesday after saying in a Fox television interview that voters should not, quote, monkey this up by electing his opponent, Andrew Gillum, who would be the state's first black governor. Mr. Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee, won the primary election in an upset on Tuesday night, handing a major victory to the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. In his interview on the first day of the general election campaign, Mr. DeSantis, who has Mr. Trump's support, attacked Mr. Gillum's candidacy by painting him as a far-left socialist. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state. This is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida. The only thing I have to say about this before I open it up to everybody is that a dog whistle to me is something that you can't hear, right? That it's implied and yet you can't hear it. This seems to me fairly blatant, right? I mean, when you watch the tape, this seems to me less of a dog whistle, more of just a shout.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem like there's much ambiguity to it.
So he had to come back and deny it and say he did a second speech and all the rest. And of course, what that means is first you say it, the word is out.
And then you deny it.
And if anybody took it, I love this one. If anybody took it the wrong way, the wrong way, how many times have you heard that from somebody who really ought to be apologizing?
And I know it's Fox News, but why isn't the anchor turning around saying, I'm sorry, you said what?
Well, she actually did hours later. I have to say it is a shocking moment in your show. She probably sat there thinking about what exactly that was all about, and she was thinking about it and had to reflect on it. So I mean, for Fox News, the anchor to come out hours later and say this was completely inappropriate and wrong and hurtful and we want nothing to do with it, I'll have to say, okay, I accept that.
I agree.
You know?
Let's face it. This is just the beginning. This is going to be an election season. Every time that we've passed an election season, we think it can't get any more divisive. This is going to be a divisive race. We already see this kind of dog whistle, to use your phrase, in the Faso Delgado race,
yes,
where he is not letting go of this whole rapper thing. There's a black woman, I believe, running for governor in Georgia. Does that sound right? But there are an increasing number of people of color who are running for office in places where people of color have not always been welcome. This is going to be just terrible, and the commander in chief is going to be leading the brigade.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, apparently people don't need dog whistles anymore. You can just come right out and say
well,
whatever
that's
you want.
It. Well, that's what I mean. We keep talking as a dog whistle as if it's code, but I mean, this is fairly blatant to me.
It's obvious, it's direct, it's messaging, and I would say to Gillum, I think he has figured this out. He's going to start working really hard on the Puerto Rican community in Florida. How about that? How about thinking about, you know, some of the people living in Florida now that were displaced by this horrendous storm, and this administration clearly could not care two hoots about what happened to Puerto Ricans.
And Trump is still claiming they did a fantastic job.
Yes, and apparently the deaths have nothing to do with anything and failure of this administration to actually provide support.
And just to avoid the letters that will come in saying, why didn't you talk about it? Talk about divisiveness. How about that debate last night between on the gubernatorial level here, where Nixon and Cuomo went at it, And, you know, I listened to most of it, and I got to tell you, I really gave Nixon huge.
Can we talk about this after the break?
Because yeah,
I think this is a good subject, and we may not totally agree.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh.
But I think one of the things we should pay attention a lot in these upcoming debates is this language that is openly discriminatory, racist, and also sexist. And on that note, I think we should discuss a number of layers of how candidates debate each other.
The other one that DeSantis has used is calling his opponent an articulate spokesman, as if an African-American could not be articulate,
right. Much
like the president saying to a border agent last week,
he speaks English really well, right? Like, what a surprise.
As I recall, the beginning of the end of Howard Cosell's career, the famous broadcaster, was on a Monday Night football game, and a running back scampered to a touchdown. Black running back.
Look
at that little monkey run.
Yes.
Or look at that little monkey go, or something like that.
Yes.
And it's my recollection that was the beginning of the end for Coase. And that's
correct.
We're talking 30 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
And yet it's still being used.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We will we'll talk about New York politics and the debate that happened last night at Hofstra University, yesterday afternoon, to be exact. We will continue right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Ira Fussfeld is here. Vera Karius-Kelly. Judy Patrick. Alan Chartek has some letters, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
Okay, Joe. Thank you.
You're welcome.
In regard to the aspect of today's discussion regarding the Electoral College, my husband and I attended Kirsten Gillibrand's town hall meeting on Sunday evening at HVCC. She mentioned that one of the issues she favors and is working on is the abolition of the Electoral College. There has been little mention of the movement towards that in the news. What would it take for this to actually happen? Is there any chance it might? P.S. The ACLU is very busy working to reconnect separated parents and children. Maybe the current situation at the Mexican border will be their next agenda. And that's Kathy from Saratoga Springs. Well, Kathy, I don't see how that Electoral College thing is going to change. What may happen is this informal agreement that each of the states will sign on to say that if, you know, whoever gets the most votes gets all of their electoral votes. But even that doesn't seem to be going very far.
There was real talk of that a few years ago, but I haven't heard about it since.
Well, yeah, every once in a while it sort of submerges. It emerges like Puff the Magic Dragon. But, you know, it isn't going to happen because it was a great compromise, and some of the states make out like bandits, and specifically the Republicans have been making out like bandits as a result of this, and they're just not going to go for it. But, of course, it's the right thing for Kirsten Gillibrand to say. It's good politics, don't you think? Mm. All right. And then Robert said, my stepdaughter was born in Brownsville 35 years ago, the same day her mother crossed the Rio Grande. Today, she is in the Florida Air National Guard and works with Homeland Security as a cybersecurity specialist. These are the kinds of people who are now being targeted for harassment by this vicious administration, Bob from Albany.
That is correct. And we are so proud of everybody who's, you know, working, pursuing careers, doing incredible things to help this country along and make it a better and more just society. Thank you.
Yep. And Thomasina says, Twitter, I'm sorry if this is random, Mr. Donahue, but I just want to ask, how is it that President Trump is allowed to tweet publicly? President Obama had his BlackBerry taken when he was elected to office. Is there any legal or constitutional reason why that restriction should have been lifted for President Trump? it does not seem very secure for the country. So why are they allowing him to do it?
Because now, Trump does what he wants.
Well, and Obama just had to have a new BlackBerry. It just had to be secure. They were it was new in the technology, and so they replaced his BlackBerry with a secure BlackBerry. That was all that was.
But I also think Ira had a very good point. There's a difference between law and norms, and that's what's happening here.
Yeah, and I think they tried to get him not to do this early on, and whether or not does he carry around his own phone is, I don't think
Well, and
so.
It's still the question. I mean, he has a person, obviously, that also does this for him, but he, or two people, I guess. There's a
the guy from Dutchess County.
Yeah, there's an office for that. But also, you go on a social media platform.
Right.
Well, he will argue with some justification that Twitter is the modern way of communication, just as with FDR it was radio and with Kennedy it was television. And so he is taking advantage of the tools. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. The problem is he's reckless.
Yeah, it's not that he tweets. Yeah, it's what he tweets.
It's reckless.
Yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure you will. But when he was listing yesterday or the day before, the egregious behavior by social media, Twitter was one of them.
Well, Google.
I think he mentioned Twitter.
No. It was about search engines. Yeah, he was saying that search engines, Yahoo and Google, but Google in particular, that when you put in his name with the word news, so if you put in Trump news.
I know that, but I hope you'll use your magic machine there, Joe.
I sort of remember him saying Twitter, Facebook, and then there was a third. But he doesn't anything wrong with the way he uses Twitter.
I think that's right. I don't like to get involved in, what was said, but I was pretty sure I was right about that. and Robin says, a scary trend. This administration chips away at everybody's citizenship they can reach, particularly minorities. And we know how they treat non-citizens. Babies are still in jail.
That is true. Some 500 children, I think, are still not united with their families, last time I checked. And also, it certainly has something to do with your skin color, whether your passport will be questioned or not. So this is a pattern that becomes, once again, very obvious.
And this is a story. That's a story that's kind of faded from the public consciousness, and we need to really keep focus on it because we're talking about children being separated from their parents.
So anyway, Norm writes passports. So people who are here years with identification are in question. What about the people from Europe during and after World War II? What about the refugees from Southeast Asia after the Vietnam War? We didn't split a lot of hairs back then. This Mexican border scam that drags down veterans and many other long-term citizens has Stephen Miller's blueprints all over it. Have Stephen check into people who dodge the draft and can't remember which foot has the bone spur. Just saying. Thanks for the show. Mm-hmm.
So Trump tweet of August 28th said, Google search results for Trump news shows only the viewing / reporting of fake news media. In other words, they have it rigged for me and others so that almost all stories and news is bad. Fake CNN is prominent. Republican conservatism fair media is shut out. Illegal? 96% of results on Trump news on Google are from national left-wing media. Very dangerous. Suppressing voices of conservatism, hiding information and news that is not good. They are controlling what we can and cannot see. This is a very serious situation. Will be addressed.
Well, Joe, I have no doubt that that is what he said in that particular tweet, but he has also talked about all of them, and that includes Twitter, which really set me back because, as you probably know, he uses it all the time.
Well, I've heard that.
Okay, so here we go. Jill says, why wasn't Canada part of the U.S.-Mexico negotiations as opposed to just the U.S. and Mexico and then give Canada a take-it-or-leave-it deal? Shouldn't they have negotiated together from the beginning? Did Canada not want part of it? Did the U.S. not want Canada to be part of it? Please explain. Thank you.
Yeah, this is a very interesting strategy that the Trump administration pursued. They went after the Mexican negotiation first and excluded conversations with Canada to put Canada under more pressure. And Mexico was, you know, the Mexican government needs a trade agreement with the United States. So the Mexican government was willing to engage in longer negotiations, and now Canada finds itself in a kind of a dicey situation, to be honest.
Well, I think a larger amount of the trade is with Mexico that we have. But beyond that, again, you personalize it, Trump and Trudeau are not getting along. He's mad at Trudeau. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, the Trump administration has had that pattern to try to negotiate bilateral deals.
Right.
Remember when Trump went to Europe and tried to have a one-country negotiation? He tried to speak with Germany and do some kind of a deal with Germany, between Germany and the United States. And Chancellor Merkel said to him, no, that's not how we work. We're the European Union. And so he got a lesson in trying to figure out, how it is to deal with trade sort of pacts, within trade pacts and entire groupings of countries. So he wanted to undermine that kind of a situation in NAFTA negotiations.
So if Trump is a bully, he is, and he adds up who has more power. Do I have more power than Canada? Do I have more power than Mexico? Do I have more power than the European Union? The answer is, in the end, yes. So then comes the discussion. So even if I hurt my own people here in the United States, I can use that power to make these people do what I want them to. That's what this is about.
An expert on NPR this morning was talking about the fact that Trump does not have the authority to do bilateral trade agreements. That in this case, it has to include Canada at some point. And so that gives Canada some leverage, because they can't proceed with the deal unless Canada signs on.
Correct.
Well, unless the entire deal is ended. Right? So, I mean, that's also a possibility, which probably would not be preferable.
The North American Free Trade Act, except for Canada. Most of North America Free Trade Act.
Yeah. But, I mean, in terms of the power issue, I think Ellen is right on the power issue, because if you have Mexico and Canada at the table negotiating at the same time, the power dynamic isn't quite as overwhelmingly in favor of the United States as if you go first after Mexico and then after Canada. So I think it's actually been a fairly successful strategy if we look at the veneer of what we see the outcome might appear to be like.
Speaking of Alan being right, so this is what I found on, by the way, I'm going to read a sentence here, and just with one word that's in the sentence, I bet you can guess what the source of the story is, of who printed the story. U.S. President Donald Trump has warned Google, Twitter, and Facebook they are treading on troubled territory amid a row over perceived bias. Come on, row, please. So Google, Twitter, he said they have to be very careful. Although, again, I don't know why he said rigging the search results of Trump news. So I don't know how you could necessarily rig that on Twitter.
Twitter will surface popular tweets, and they are always surfacing
what's
Trump
trending
tweets to me.
What's trending?
I would not object to Google being more transparent. I can recall we were very upset with Google, we being my former newspaper, when we would publish a story and then we would search and find that our version of the story either was not posted or was not posted high enough, when in fact it was a local story that we had done better than anyone else.
And in fact, Ira, people are making money on this.
Yeah.
For years, people have been saying, we can help you
get
to the head of the line.
Yes. And by the way, that problem that I just described was largely fixed at the corporate level, and I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Now, what about that Nixon
debate? Yes, let's talk about that.
Okay, that is the story. So the debate was yesterday, Hofstra University, and Cynthia, I'm going to get the dates wrong on this, but it was the governor's first head-to-head debate in 13 years, something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, may I offer my analysis?
That's why I looked at
you. Oh, that's why I was hoping. Well, you know, Rex looked at me when we did the last show, and he was talking to Alan. So
I think it was those new glasses.
Yes, that's one. I thought that Cynthia Nixon did very well. I thought she showed that she belonged on the stage with Cuomo, and if that is, as it often is, a measurement of the who won and who lost, I think she can be very pleased with her performance. But I did think that, and she was the aggressor, which she had to be. I do think that Andrew Cuomo was able to better handle the facts. I thought he was better served to analyze on issues that perhaps Nixon would not be as familiar with. And I was surprised, my expectations for Cuomo were low. And so I was noted that he did not take the bait. He did not lose his temper. He did not say something that would have gotten back on YouTube as a sexist remark. So, you know,
he told her to shut up. That wasn't so good.
Well, he said stop interrupting, and she was interrupting.
Oh, please. We can't have women interrupting men.
Well, that's a problem. That has nothing to do with a man or a woman. He would have said stop interrupting if the candidate was a male as well.
You know, and then we've had some mail on this. I just want to read one that just came in, and that is what happened in the discussion about the debate. I'm interested in hearing Ira's opinion. We just heard it.
Wow.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then we also heard, for all of Andrew Cuomo's misgivings, he's one of the few voices continually addressing the dumpster fire in the White House in a strong way, not to mention the actual policy achievements made during his tenure. Political outsiders are certainly more desirable, but last night made it evident that we need effective leadership right now. And that's from Reed. I would take the other side on that one, not surprisingly. You know, I think that the one thing that was made quite clear was that the Cuomo administration is corrupt. It's been corrupt from the beginning. You have his top advisors involved in corruption. And now they say, people say to me all the time, well, what we really need here is, is effective leadership. And Nixon doesn't have that record. And say, the record of what? Having surrounded by corrupt people, by disbanding the Moreland Act Commission, by what's going on in the New York City subways? I thought she did a very good job.
She put him on his heels, without a doubt.
Yes, all of that stuff.
By the way, I'll let you guys talk. Just if it is driving me crazy on every political debate I watch, that there is an audience that decides it has to be part of the debate. I think these debates should be held with the questioners and the participants and the no studio audience. I think it distracts from the debate and it sometimes can color the way the debate is.
I agree with you. And we did a bit the debate, and I mentioned it on the air yesterday. I'd like to mention it again. Between the three people who are running for attorney general in for district attorney in Berkshire County. And one of the candidates brought a group of people with her, and despite the fact that Ian Pickus quite correctly laid down no applause until before or after, her group, Judith Knight's group, were really obnoxious about it. Hmm. And I thought they deserved to be called out about that.
The only way to prevent it is to not invite anybody there.
Well,
and why do you need, if you're asking people to come in and shut up, then why do you need an audience?
Okay, but Joe, most of the time they do shut up. Most of the time they do know what the rules are.
Only at the presidential debates. They seem to do very well there. My experience is that they don't do it on other debates.
Well, I must say, I was very disappointed.
Even the word debate doesn't even seem right for those kinds
One
of...
debate.
Yeah, it sort of seems like, you know, there's a question, there's, a monologue. It's not really a debate.
In terms of
the fundamental debates that you see in British Parliament, for example.
Those are good. Those are debates. Yeah.
You know, as a citizen, you feel an obligation to watch these things, but I was dreading it because they're basically boxing matches. And I hated the first part of the debate where they were just going, it was impolite. They're going back and forth with each other. But as it went on, I really felt like they were talking about some real issues and informing the public. I thought they both did well. I thought Andrew Cuomo looked more relaxed than I've seen him look in a long time, and I thought he answered questions well.
I agree. And I also think that in comparison to, say, a Donald Trump-Hillary Clinton debate, which perhaps is an unfair comparison, you have two people who were treating each other with respect. They were arguing over issues, and they were, there would be an occasional swipe. But I think for the most part, it was a high level of
But it's pretty tough stuff when she calls the sitting governor a liar. And then he, I thought, one of his faux pas was when he said to her, "I'll stop lying when you do."
Right.
And, which is seems to be an admission by himself that he lied.
Yeah, right. Right.
And her lies had to do with the taxes, right?
Well, there was that. I think she was
the tax issue was a big one for him,
right?
Well, he got a score there, right? You're exactly right.
Yeah, but she was right.
Subways, Ira, that was a tough one. He said this is not a state, and she called him on it, and she was right.
Yeah, but you know, she hurt herself near the end of the debate, and they skimmed over it when she said, "I want more money in education and less in law and order." Now, I'm not going to argue against money for education, but I imagine a lot of people in the state would say, no, we need to have money in law and order.
Well, except that he's been portraying himself, Ira, as a reborn again leftist.
Yeah.
But are we burying the lead here?
Which was,
he said,
oh, yes.
I will fill out my term. Right. I am not running for president
unless
in 2020.
Unless he drops dead.
I thought I saw some smoke coming out of his pants.
I wasn't looking.
Hope that was
as Al D'Amato once said, "That was then, and this is now."
Well, you know, we never know till we know. Okay. That is true.
You know, and as an upstate resident, I just want to say I don't really care about the subway system. I mean, I personally, and what the Tappan Zee Bridge
is
named.
Well, it was an Hofstra, but
I believe that Chris Churchill's column today says that most of the debate ignored most of the state.
Yeah, didn't care.
Doesn't it always? I mean, this is what happens in these kinds of gubernatorial debates that take place in New York City. I mean, when does upstate decide any of it?
And also, there was the nobody seemed to want the support of poor Mayor de Blasio.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want it.
Well, that's
Please.
Interesting. That's interesting because the same thing happened in the Attorney General debate. When they asked them, including, the Cuomo favored candidate, nobody wanted to say that they were gung-ho for this governor.
Hmm. It's interesting. Well, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. We'll be back in a little bit with more show. My thanks to Ira and Vera and Judy and Alan and you, of course. We'll
and
be
the
back.
Bacon.
Yes, our special guest, the bacon. You're listening to The Roundtable at WAMC.
Brother.